77, butterfly collar. Walk outside with that on in San Antonio, now you'll burn up. But George, tell us about that finger roll from the free throw line.
Yeah, that was my patented. That was my patented shot. One thing I could do was finger roll. Oh yeah, I can do that.
Wilt Chamberlain was the first guy that really had a finger roll. I mean, it wasn't really a finger roll. It was more like, you know, rolling it off and rolling it down in the basket. You see Connie Hawkins, you know, kind of, you know, did the finger roll. And Julius Erving, you know, kind of did the finger roll. So I kind of, like, took a piece from all them guys, you know, and started doing it myself. You know what I mean? So really that's, you know, people always saying the inventor of the finger roll. You know, I can't take that. You know what I mean? I'm not the one who invented it. I'm the guy that was smart enough to know that these three guys had a lot of success rolling that ball off their finger, so I tried my own version, and, you know, and so that's how I really came up with my own finger roll. I used to finger roll from the free throw line. That's a finger roll. I used to finger roll from over the backboard. That's a finger roll. I mean, a finger roll is something special, I mean, and you think about it. And what I like about it is that, you know, they always say, you know, Kobe is the next Michael Jordan, or LeBron James is the next Michael Jordan. They ain't saying nobody is the next Iceman. You know, I kind of like that, you know. Kind of put me in a special place, you know.
I think that sums it up, gentlemen.
Let me welcome everybody. Thank you for tuning in again. I want to welcome everybody and tell everybody this guy here is a very special gentleman to me. Known him all my life. A lot of you people know him. You don't know him off the court very well, but it's the same thing that you saw on the court. This guy is as smooth as they come, and I'm not saying that as just a brother. I'm talking about as a human being, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in and welcome my brother to the show, George the Iceman Gervin.
What's up, dude?
Right. How you doing, sir?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Well, first I want to tell you, man, you know it's a pleasure to me, and I'm not saying it as just a guy on the radio. I'm a big brother, and I love you to death, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I also have Ricky Hampton on here, my partner, and Mr. Michael Robertson, and we all want to give it up and thank you very well. I thank you very much for being on, and I'll let those guys tell you on their own.
All right.
Hey, George, welcome to the Derek Gervin As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast, man. Had a chance to cover you a couple of times during my sports writing career. But, hey, next time in Detroit, man, we got to tee it up on the golf course because, like you, I am an avid golfer. So I'm putting in my plug right now.
My man. All right. That's what I enjoy doing, man. So I look forward to it.
Absolutely, bro.
All right, Ike. This is Mike Robertson, probably your number one fan. I've loved you ever since I was a kid back in the 70s. And I actually got the pleasure to meet and interview you back in the 92-93 season when you were assistant coach of the Spurs. And my guy from my hometown, Jim Chong, kind of introduced us. He brought you over, and I was being professional, but it was hard. I was like, "Oh my god, this is my favorite player." And then, so we, you know, we chit chatted and all that. But then, fast forwarding, just a bit of irony: your son was roommate with another homeboy of mine, and that was Alex Scales. So just kind of interesting how my hometown interacted with you like that. So yeah, Alex Scales was roommate with G. Gervin at San Jacinto, I believe.
Yeah. Jump out of the gym, Alex Scales, boy. Just jump out of the gym.
Yep, that's
fine. Oh, that's good, man. Well, good to be on the show with you guys, man. Derek been trying to get me on this show for a little while, man. So, you know, that's my baby brother, man. He don't like me calling my baby brother, but he is. And good to be here, man. I heard you done had some guys that I done competed against and played with of late, and you know, it's good that all the guys, man, want to, you know, be a part of what you're doing, Derek. That's good, man. That's just that respect they have for you.
Well, thank you. George,
I missed speaking with you because you guys didn't win the game, but you were out here in Oakland for the big three, and I wanted to interact with you, but they just brought the teams that won into the presser room, so I got a chance to meet the doctor, which is awesome. But you coaching right now. What does that feel like being on that end of the basketball story, being a coach after all your great years of playing, and then also your baby brother also coaching the youngsters down in San Antonio?
Well, fun, man. I mean, you know, obviously I'm coaching guys that already had a career, you know, in the NBA,
right.
You know, so they already played, and, you know, Ice Cube give them another stage to, you know, to play and to, you know, kind of continue their career. I think one of the things, Ice Cube, you know, he's a basketball junkie. He loved basketball, and, you know, he created a venue, you know, for these guys to, you know, kind of continue their career. So, for me, you know, I mean, I do a little coaching, but it's mostly management.
Okay.
You know, these guys that played, man, I mean, they know how to play. I mean, what I try to remind them to do, man, is only one way to play, and that's together, especially in three-on-three where you don't really have that much room, you know, in a half-court setting. And, you know, obviously this year it didn't work, man, because we won one game, man. So, you know, that wasn't too fun, man. But I enjoy coaching, man, the three-on-three.
All right.
George, I wanted you to tell people, because a lot of people, they read stories about you and things, but, you know, I know firsthand. So I kind of wanted you, I talk to the kids all the time about, you know, somebody, about lighting the fire. Sometimes coaches can motivate kids, but I talk to them about self-motivation, motivating themselves, and, you know, trying to reach goals. And sometimes we're in this game, you know, it's not an easy game, and the players, the young people, they struggle. And they struggle mentally a lot of times, and things don't go their way. And instead of giving up, you know, I believe you have to persevere. You go ahead and you fight. I want people to really know tonight about your career as you were young. I'm 11 years younger than George. So when George was 16, as you know, I'm 5. So I didn't see a lot of what went on early in his career. And people don't know the history, and I want them to understand tonight so they know that you always continue to fight. Could you tell them a little bit about your career when you were a teenager and how things didn't go your way and how you, what you did to turn them around?
Well, I mean, you know, I really, you know, I had our other two brothers, Claude and Booker, is a guy that I pretty much looked up to, you know, and really how they prepared to play the game, you know. You know, both of them guys, man, I mean, they did all the calisthenics. I mean, they shot the basketball. You know, they had a passion for the game, man, that, you know, later on in life I found out that that's what it took in order to, you know, really just have a good chance to be successful. So, you know, once I really fell in love with the, you know, the game of basketball, I went to work. I mean, when I say I went to work, you know, I start shooting the basketball, you know, every day. You know, I mean, because, you know, when I was in ninth grade, I was 5'11". And then when I was a sophomore, you know, I was 6'6". You know, so at 5'11", what I did was, you know, shot the ball all the time, worked on my fundamentals. I mean, laying the ball up left hand, laying the ball up right-handed, and, you know, and I was real skinny and small, so, you know, people didn't really have that kind of confidence in me that I can, you know, be successful. But I grew that next year and stuff and still had that skill that I worked on as a 5'11 guy. And, you know, it really just turned my basketball around, man. I put in work, man. I mean, like Derek said, man, you know, it's a hard game. Every, you know, a lot of people compete in it. I mean, a lot of guys love this game. You just got to work at it, you know. How do you gain confidence? How do you gain self-esteem? It's the work that you put in, you know. I shot the ball 500 to 600 times every day. You know, I go to camps and I ask kids, do they want to play ball? And they say, yeah, I mean, and I asked them how many I'm shooting at 200 or 300 times a day, and nobody raised their hand. You know, so it's a method to getting better. You know, and I try to give them that roadmap to what it takes to get better. Because if you're shooting the ball 400 or 500 times a day, you know, and I'm not just saying shooting at standstill. I'm saying moving to the right, shoot the ball. Move to the left, shoot the ball. Lay the ball up with your left hand. Lay the ball up with your right hand. Them are fundamentals. I mean, and once you get fundamentally sound with this game, you can take it to the next level. I mean, it's like building a strong foundation. You know, I mean, and we all old enough to know what a foundation is. And I mean, if you have a strong foundation, I mean, you can really take that game to, you know, another level, man. So that's what I did as a young man. And, you know, and that's where I know I had my success as a high school guy, a college guy, and a pro, man, because I was fundamentally sound.
So, 40 years ago, I'm in elementary school. People couldn't shut me up about you. You get the MVP for the All-Star game in Washington, D.C., and then comes down to the last day, you and David Thompson, Skywalker, go for the scoring title. You get 63-33 in one quarter, the record for a long time, without the three-pointer, I may add. And then the upset happens against the Bullets, and the Bullets somehow get to the finals and beat Seattle. So what does 40 years ago, 1978, mean to you with all that happened during that year?
Well, I mean, that was really my come-out year because that was my first scoring title, you know, and it's really how it came about because I was leading the league in scoring all the way until the last game. And, you know, that last game, fortunately for me, I played at night and David Thompson played in the afternoon. So, you know, I got a chance to, you know, kind of hear what David did, you know. And David was playing in my hometown, Detroit, and he scored 73. So David kind of took the scoring lead, you know, from me at that time, you know, just by some percentage points. So the media called me. I was in New Orleans and stuff, you know, getting ready to play the Jazz and stuff. So the media called me and said, David Thompson just took over the scoring lead. He scored 73. You got to score 59 in order to regain the title. So, you know, thankfully for me, I had a coach named Doug Moe who was a good friend with Larry Brown, who was coaching the Denver Nuggets. And he found out that, you know, what happened, and they gave David the ball and let David blow up in Detroit. And Coach Moe, once we got over into the locker room in New Orleans, and Coach Moe said, look here, guys, man, we want to try to get George this scoring title. I mean, you know, so it's up to you guys if y'all want to help George get this scoring title. So all my guys agreed. Went out the first quarter. I missed my first six shots, called timeout because I need 59 points. So, you know, I mean, I need 59 going in. So, you know, I was a little nervous. And, you know, a guy was on the sideline, man, named Pete Maravich, man. I mean, he was encouraging me, you know, and we all know who Pete is. And so for me, I went back out there and I ended up scoring 20 points, you know, in the first quarter. And then the second quarter, I ended up scoring 33. So, you know, again, I only needed 59. So I had 53 at half. So the second half started and, you know, I ended up getting 59. And, you know, the trainer told me, you got 59. So I said, well, let me get a couple more just in case they miscalculated. And I ended up getting 63 points in 33 minutes. And I won my first scoring title.
You know, I also called you, and my mom, we called you that night, the David Thompson night. And it was so funny because it was ironic because the game that David Thompson played was in Detroit. That's just how things go. Now, I also wanted to ask you, a lot of people don't know, you started out as a young guy. You didn't, after you left college, some things went on, and then you moved on to college. So a lot of people weren't familiar with your college career.
when I saw you play, I was 11 years younger. So that's at the time I started saying, like, wow, this guy is special. And I wasn't looking at you as my brother. I was just looking at you as a ball player. Tell these people a little bit about your Eastern Michigan days.
Well, you know, my Eastern Michigan days, you know, I average 30 and 20, you know. So, you know, college-wise, man, I could oop. I mean, it was fun. I mean, I tell all young guys, man, I mean, if you're able to play college ball, man, I mean, and get in a good situation, because everybody don't get in a good situation, and, you know, I'm one of them guys that had the green light. I mean, I know Derek know what the green light is. I don't know if you two other brothers know what the green light is, but the green light is that you can shoot whenever you want to, you know.
Right.
So to have that kind of privilege, man, to be able to shoot whenever I wanted to, man, where the coach can have that kind of trust in you, I didn't have to shoot all the time, man, because, you know, I always believe, man, and I still believe today, man, that the game is designed to play one way, man, and that's as a team, so I always like getting my teammates involved, you know what I mean, because, you know, obviously if I can shoot when I want, I mean, and I need their help, you know. I mean, I need, you know, Bill James to get rebounds. I need Gary Tyson to be able to pass the ball. So, you know, I have to play with them. I call that the game inside the game, you know, where you have to make these other guys feel good about the game also, man, in order to have some success, man. So I think that was one of my strengths, man, in understanding how the game is played, man, and, you know, and how you have success in the game. You know, I always was thinking and playing. You know, I wasn't just playing. I was thinking and playing. I mean, I knew I can score. So I knew that guy was guarding me. He was already beat. I was always thinking, where was the help going to come from? You know what I mean? So that's how into the game that I was, man. I mean, I love that game of basketball, man, and college really gave me that confidence, man, to let me know, man, that, you know, I could take it to that next level, man, if I had the opportunity.
Hey, Ice, this is Ricky Hansen. I remember you from your ABA days. I went to school in Richmond at Virginia Union.
Okay.
And, man, the basketball you guys played then is exactly what I see today. Can you speak to that? Do you agree with that? And what was that experience like in the ABA playing with Doc and all those guys?
Well, let's talk about how I got there. You know what I mean? Obviously, you know, Derek knew I had some, you know, I had an incident in college to where, you know, I didn't stay 4 years. I got into, you know, a scuffle and a fight with Jay Pacola, you know, in a tournament. And my coach, you know, kicked me off the team. So I withdrew from school and joined the CBA, which is the semi-pros in Pontiac. And I played this semi-pro ball for about 6 months, and I was averaging 8. And Johnny Red Kerr was the scout for the Chicago Bulls, and he also knew Earl Foreman, who was the owner of the Virginia Squires. So Johnny Red Kerr called Earl Foreman and said, Earl, you need to take a look at this guy. He can flat out play. Earl flew me in. See, people don't know, man, I had to shoot. You know, they flew me in. I went into Virginia. They told me, you know, we went to practice, and they say, shoot around. So I shot around, and everybody sat down and watched me shoot. I made 25 out of 33s, and they signed me to my contract. So that's how I started my ABA career. Fortunately for me, Dr. J was on that team, you know, and Dr. J was Mr. ABA, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all
yeah.
everybody talked about was Dr. J. So it was a blessing for me to be able to come in a situation to where, you know, I can get schooled by the doctor. You know, I never forget it, joining that team. And, you know, we used to practice, and then after practice, and, you know, I used to thought – think I was finished. And Doc used to always say, "Hey, Rook, where you going, man?" I said, "I'm going in the locker room." He said, "No, man, me and you ain't through." And me and him used to play one-on-one after practice all the time. You know what I mean? And that first week, man, you know, I was a little nervous of him because who he was. I mean, and, you know, that first week, man, he was going by me, dunking on me. I mean, you know, using that quickness and stuff. And then once I got comfortable, you know, I mean, because one thing I could do was shoot the ball. So once I got comfortable and I started playing against him that second week, I didn't let him get the ball back because I started shooting that jumper on him. You know, I mean, so he helped build my confidence up and self-esteem, man, to you know, make me feel like I was in the right place at the, you know, at the right time, man. So, you know, so for me, man, you know, I left school, but I went in the right place at the right time, and the right guy, Johnny Red Kirsch, saw me, that knew the owner, that it was the right situation for me, and I was able to sign my first contract, man, with the, you know, the ABA Virginia Squires, man. It was an unbelievable league, man. We had a bunch of young guys, man, that can flat out play basketball, man, and I was just so thrilled, man, to be in that league, man, to have that opportunity to play professional basketball.
Do you think that league, the way you guys played then, is similar to what we're seeing today?
Yeah, well, exactly. We average, you know, in the ABA, man, we average 118, 119 points. You know, I mean, our whole goal was to get up and shoot that basketball, man. I mean, you know, they talk about Golden State. I mean, but, you know, Golden State is nothing but a ABA team. You know, I mean, where you got guys, I mean, that can just flat out shoot. See, you got more than one guy that can shoot the ball. You know, I mean, when you think about, you know, the champs, man, you know, Golden State, man, well, they got 4 or 5 guys that can shoot the ball, man. You know, that's how we was in the ABA, man. I mean, you got guys in the ABA, man, that just don't get enough due, man. A lot of your listeners probably ain't never heard of a guy named Roger Brown, man, Freddie Lewis, Billy Keller, man, Billy Knight, man, I mean, these guys, man, you know, you talk about a guy named Alex Inglis.
Yeah.
Alex Inglis got 2,000 points for over 7 years in a row, man. But don't nobody talk about it, man. I mean, so it's unfair, but it's reality, man, because you got to sell these guys that's playing today. But that history, man, I mean, if people really took their time and looked at that history, man, of some of these guys that played this game, man, they probably wouldn't pay attention to some of these guys that playing today, man. You know what I mean? Because that's how good a lot of these guys was, man, back in the ABA, man. And, you know, and it's sad, man, that a lot of these guys, man, is going to be forgotten.
Sure. We're going to try to do our best not to let them be forgotten. Here
oh, yeah,
on
Derek
Davis'
Against
Basketball podcast.
Awesome. I sure appreciate that, man.
You had guys like Rick Mount. What do you think? Like, you had guys like Rick Mount. A lot of people even today aren't familiar with Dan Issel. A lot of people don't know about the Artis Gilmores and Moses Malones. Those guys came from that league as well.
Yeah,
it's sad that they don't get their just due. You know, there was a lot of guys, like you said, that played the game at a high level.
David Thompson, man. I mean, David T, man. I mean, man, you just had some guys, man. I mean, just can flat out play, man. See, I bet most people, man, today don't know who scored the most college points in the history of the game. Most people think it's Pete Maravich, but really it's Travis Machine Gun Grant.
Yeah,
that played for Kentucky State.
Kentucky State. Yeah.
Hey man, Travis Machine Gun Grant got 73 on us in 40 minutes. We won 18 in a row, man, and went up to Kentucky. They beat us by 50, and he scored 73. Flat out shoot it, man. I mean, just flat out shoot the basketball. I mean, everything was set up for him to shoot. But that's kind of team they had, man. But he just flat out shoot the ball. I mean, so, you know, man, we got some guys, man, in the history of this game, man, like y'all say, man, y'all ain't going to let them die, man. And, you know, we need a venue like this, man, to where you can talk about, man, some of the history of the game, man, and let these guys, man, have their flowers, man, while they still here.
Hey, Ice, we got a ton of callers who are set up to talk to you. But, Mike, you go on with your question, and then we'll get a couple of callers in the Ice.
Okay, so I fast forward to the 84-85 season. I'm a senior in high school in the Bulls and Bucks territory, so I saw a lot of you play against the Bulls and the Bucks. And you played an all-star game. You played an all-star game. Should have been MVP, but they gave it to Ralph Sampson. But you're playing against the future star, Michael, and then all that controversy went with that, and then eventually you get traded to Chicago. And it's rumored that he wasn't too happy about the
trade. He wasn't.
So, right. So, what was that season like? Michael broke his foot second game of the season, and you were flourishing while he was out. But what was it like when you guys actually played together?
Well, that's karma, man. That's something, man. Cause he didn't like the trade. I mean, you know, and it wasn't because of me. He didn't like the trade because, you know, they got rid of Higgins. You know, and Higgins was his best friend. You know, and they got rid of Higgins without telling him. So, I mean, it was unfortunate. I mean, and I fell in that kind of situation, you know, when I joined them. But, again, that All-Star game in Indiana, you're right, man, I should have won MVP. I'm still mad at Pat Riley. You know, Pat Riley, man, he gypped me again. I mean, but that's all right. That's all right, I was killing the young Mike. You know
exactly.
What I mean? But I ain't mad at nobody. I mean, so, hey, but, you know, to be able to go and play in Chicago, you know, with a young Mike and play and practice with a young Mike, man, it was incredible, man. I mean, Mike had a drive, man, that I wish all kids that think they want to play basketball had that same drive and they wouldn't have a problem. He played just as hard in practice as he did in the games. You know what I mean? So I saw the potential in him that was scary. You know, I mean, a guy that loved the game. He had nothing but skills. He was an athlete. I mean, you know, I really enjoyed that year with him, you know. And then he got hurt, you know. So he got hurt, so he had to sit down and watch an old Iceman, you know. hey, you know, but what was funny is, he had a chance to see the Iceman of old, too. You know, I mean, I was old, but I still had some game, you know, I mean. But, you know, you get older, you ain't as good as you was when you was younger. But I still had some Iceman of old in me. And I remember we was in Dallas, man, and we played, and I got 35 at half. And I remember after the game, I only end up probably with about 40, 43, 44. And he came to me, oh, well, what happened, old man? I said, I just wanted you to see the Iceman of old, big guy. I mean, you know, I just wanted, you know. I mean, so, you know, I tell people all the time, I mean, whether or not he want to admit it or not, he had to learn something from me in the sense of, the love of the game, you know, because, you know, I could play. I mean, I ain't ashamed to say I could play. I mean, I could play. I mean, and I know how I am as a basketball player that love the game and how I admire other guys that could play, you know, and he's no exception because I know he'll love the game, man. So, you know, I want to say that he seen some things in me that he probably made himself better. You know, I mean, because, you know, some games I went to work, you know. But I was, you know, I was 36, man. I was done. I mean, I tell anybody, you know, I was on my way out, you know. I mean, because I retired after that year, you know. But I started with Julius Erdman, and I finished my career with Michael Jordan. People always ask, I said, well, who was the best? Two eras. Julius was the best in his era, and Mike was the best in his era. I can't say it no different. You know what I mean? Because we can't shrink the time and bring them together. You know what I mean? Both of them was great, you know, and I got a chance to play with both of them, and I'm quite sure both of them will tell you, I had some game.
Hey, Rick. All right, we're going to go to our guest line here. And,
Rick.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Rick, let me ask a real quick follow-up. George, now, was there a situation where Quentin Daly didn't want to give up 44 because you wore number 8 in Chicago, and Quentin Daly had 44, and I was upset?
It was his number. So, number didn't mean nothing to me. I was still me, you know, so I wasn't that caught up in that. You know what I'm saying? One thing about me, man, I had no problem being me.
Okay.
You know, that was just the jersey I wore, man. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I say, y'all, let's go with 4 and 4, and that equal 8.
Okay.
You know, so I'm still 44.
Okay.
You're listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast with the legendary George Iceman Gervin, Derek's big brother. Hey, we're going to take a couple of phone calls. We got listeners lined up from all over the country. Let's go to the Motor City, area code 313, last 4 digits, 442. You're on with the Iceman.
Good evening, Iceman. This is Ralph Riddle. I'm from Lansing, Michigan. I came out of Sexton in 1970, and I grew up watching and hearing about you in Detroit. And one of my first experiences seeing you in person was at the Intermural Building in Michigan State. You remember Bill Kilgore?
Yes, sir. I remember Bill Kilgore.
I remember it was, at Michigan State, everybody used to come through Michigan, Eastern, bring their squad, and you came through there one year playing down the basement, and Bill was kind of roughed you up, I remember. Next thing I knew, you grabbed the board and went down, took you down the court. And you remember what happened?
No, I don't remember.
He banged on him, and everybody was running around the gym like crazy. he was trying to enforce his will on you because he was a little thicker. And as I recall, he got a little upset about it and snatched that board and went down, and everybody was howling like in a Spike Lee movie. So I just appreciate your game. I grew 5 inches from the ninth grade to 10th grade, so I had the little fellow skills. And then, so I grew up kind of emulating your game. And Urban grew up about 3 blocks away from me. He's 7 years younger than I. And I believe I signed the Earl of Pearl for sure.
Yeah.
But, so we came from, we played some ball up in Lansing. And saw you come through and just always appreciate the game. And I, along with Mr. Robinson, was one of your number one fans, man.
Hey, man, I appreciate that, man. I mean, thank you, man. Thank you very much, man, because, you know, man, that's the beauty of it, man, because you're talking about, man, you know, the 70s, man. I mean, you know, so that means a lot to me, man. I do really appreciate, you know, that support, man, and prayerfully, man, you know, you and yours are well, man. I truly do thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much, and it's been a joy watching you, and you have represented the D in Michigan and yourself supremely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Okay, let's take another call. I think this is the nation's capital, area code 212, last 4 digits, 6811. You're on with the Iceman.
Hello.
202. Hello. You're on with the Iceman.
You're still nervous.
Okay. I'd be nervous too, Ice. I mean, your impact on the game is, it's lasted generations. Like I said, when you guys were in Norfolk and would come down to Richmond, I mean, we were seeing stuff that we had never seen before. And the thing about it, George, we could get in the game. Tickets were only $5.
Oh, yeah.
But at that time, getting $5, man, you know, that was some work. But, man, we
could
go 2 feet up in the top of the Coliseum. And by halftime, we're down there near the bench.
Our home court was Richmond, Hampton, yeah. and the Scope. You know, all yeah. three of them was our home gym.
Yeah. And again, that's why I made that comparison earlier. I mean, that was just some exciting basketball that was being played at that time. So when you think about it, the ABA, George, was freaking 40 years ahead of its time in terms of basketball, because the NBA certainly wasn't playing that way back then.
That's right. I mean, you think about it, man, like this, man. I mean, in 76, when we merged the four teams, you know, Indiana, you know, San Antonio, and Denver, and New Jersey, we changed the face of the NBA. Whether they want to give us credit or not, if you look yeah. at it, we went in 76, 77 year. 77 All-Star game was mostly ABA guys. I mean, so we changed the face of the NBA, man. And, you know, the sad part about it is, man, they don't recognize, man, our pensions, you know, for these ABA guys, man, that need it. You know, that's the sad yeah. thing about it, man. I mean, the impact that we had on the game of basketball, man, back then, and the way we changed the game of high play, because, you know, we sped it up. Once, you know, because the NBA was playing that old slow basketball, scoring 70 points and 80 points a game. And when we came in, we started scoring 100 and something, 110. I think with San Antonio, we averaged about 110 for 2-3 years.
Right.
You know, so, you know, that's the sad part about that, you know, but that's for another, you know, another time, man. But the ABA, man, in 76, when they merged with that NBA, changed the face of the game. And like you say, man, we were 40 years early. You know, now people yeah. are raving about how this game is played, and it's really played yeah. like the old ABA.
You're absolutely right. Let's try another caller. Area code 404, last four digits 3313. You're on with the
that's
ice.
That's Atlanta.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
Atlanta. Atlanta. We're all over the country, George.
Hey, right.
Atlanta, you're on
the
air.
How's it going? This is Robert Wallace on the line. What's up, George?
Robert Wallace?
Robert Skywalker Wallace hollering at you. What's up, Derek?
Hey, Derek, Robert Wallace, man. Wow, how you doing, man?
Hey, I got something for you, though. Hemisphere Arena, all right?
Okay.
I got the poster at my at UTSA with the ice. You know, you got the two gray balls. You got the suit on. You're sitting on the ice. You got Gene Banks, Artis Gilmore, Johnny Moore, Iceman Gervin, and you got Derek Gervin, you know, at UTSA. Let me tell you something. The experience I had through Derek to get to you, I learned a lot about basketball, and I think that attributed to my professional career playing with the Harlem Globetrotters for 10
yes,
years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So
all
I'd just
right,
like to say thank
man.
You, George. Yeah,
God,
you remember back in the day, boy. You was doing it all, man. You was a great
hey, man. Hey, y'all, this young man could flat out jump out of the gym. Rob Wallace, man. Rob, how long did you play yep. with the Globetrotters?
Actually, I played with them for 8 years in the front office for 2 years.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
Good for you, man. Good for you, man.
Yeah, we traveled 90 countries, but everywhere I went around the world, I've been to 90 countries around the world. Everywhere I went, they knew about the Harlem Globetrotters, and they knew about Iceman George Gervin. I had them posted everywhere around the world. Trust me, I'm telling you the truth.
My man.
So I just
my
appreciate
man.
You growing up. I appreciate you growing up, and you was a great influence on me. Derek had the attitude that I knew he was going to make it, and I was a more humble player back in college at UTSA, but I learned a lot by being more focused through Derek and learning and seeing how you was already there, how Derek was on that path to get to the professionals. I just knew that something was going to rub off, and I'm glad it rubbed off the right way where I got the attitude and the mentality to play and maintain myself in pro. So I like to
thank you. Man, we're proud of you, man. We're proud of you, man. Always have been, bro.
Proud
good call, man.
Yes, sir. All right,
thank
you.
People, I want the people to know who you are, Rob. All right? I played at University of Texas San Antonio for 3 years, and then I left a year early. So the 3 years I spent, this gentleman on the phone was my teammate for all 3 years. So that's how special he is to me. I mean, wow. Not only a globetrotter, but a guy that I've known since my years of growing up. That's an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. So, you know, that's impactful. A guy that I remember the rest of my life and a friend of mine. So I'm glad everyone to know who you are, Rob. And, man, I love you, and I'm glad you called in. And, you know, I mean that sincerely, man. I love you to death, man.
I know, man. I'm glad you're doing well, and I'm looking forward to hear more from you. And, George, I know you ain't far from done, so you'll be in there.
I'm looking
forward to seeing y'all and getting together. I can't say nothing about the golf game, but you know what I'm saying? I love to see it.
I can hit it, Rob. I can hit it, man. But, you know, the key is I made a living putting it in the hole, so I'm still putting it in the hole.
You are. There you are.
Love
congratulations,
man.
George.
All right. Thanks, man. Much love to you.
All right.
Hey George, when you first picked up a basketball, did you have a dream of the things and the adventures that this simple game would take you to?
No, man. I mean, I ain't have no imagination, man. I mean, you know, I mean, I couldn't imagine it, man, because, you know, it was nobody in my life, you know, before me that, you know, was able to use that game like it, you know, fortunately for me. You know, I was just in love with the game, man. I mean, you know, and I tell everybody, man, I mean, I love the game of basketball, so I wanted to be the best. So what did I do to try to be the best? I worked at it. You know, I mean, I got that confidence in it, man. I go back to self-esteem. That only comes from work. I ain't play basketball, man, to be a Hall of Famer. I played it because I loved it, man, and I got pretty good at it. And then they put me in the Hall. You know, so it was different. You know, I mean, that game took me around the world, man. But, you know, what that game has really done for me, it opened up some doors for me, man, to do a lot of the things that I enjoy doing today, man, and that's working with kids, man. And you know, Derek know about our school, I mean, our charter school, man. I mean, graduating these kids, man. And, you know, I mean, a lot of our kids want to play sports, man, be entertainers, man. It ain't nothing wrong with that, you know. But what we got to continue to tell our babies, man, okay, that might be your plan A, man, but you got to have a plan B, C, and D just in case A don't work out. You know, so I think it's our job as older men is to teach younger men to be better men, and I believe that with all my heart.
All right. Wow. So Ice,
that's what I'm saying.
Ice, quick question. I talked about me growing up in the Milwaukee, Chicago area. Do you remember this game, a triple overtime game against the Bucks? You down in the Hemisphere Arena.
Yeah, can I remember that game with Brian Winters?
Yeah, Brian Winters, Jr. Bridgman. Yeah, yes, awesome. That was awesome.
Oh man, that was triple overtime, man.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I remember. Brian had some big numbers that game. Brian would shoot the lights out, man.
Exactly.
But you know, I think I had 50 something. And do you remember a guy named Mike Mitchell?
Yep, Mike Mitchell. Yeah.
Mike had 40.
Right. That game was
you know
awesome.
What I mean? So, you know, I'm trying to figure this out, man. What on an NBA team, what two guys on the NBA team, one scores 50 and the other one scores 40? Find that out. I don't think you can find it out.
And like I said, Brian Winters had 30-something and so did Junior Bridgman. So it was like on both sides, it was just like – it was just
we scored 170-something.
Yep.
I mean,
that was no 3-point line either, was it?
And that was no 3-point line. Man, that 3-point line overrated, man. I was never a good 3-point shooter. You know, what Golden State have proven is that the game has evolved. When I played, the game was played from inside out. Now the game is played from outside in because it's entertainment. You know, when we played, it was a different kind of entertainment. Now it's all entertainment. You know, it's like you got the video game. You know, it's like you got that console in your hand. You know, because that's what they selling, man. They sell the game now, man. You know what I mean? And when I played, man, people fell in love with the game, man, because it was competitive. You know what I mean? People knew we was coming to work. You know, we didn't cry. You know what I mean? These guys cry all the time. You know, I wish a bunch of people bring a bunch of cheese, man, to the game, man, because they whine so much, man. They can have wine and cheese. They whine all the time, man. The great ones, the so-called great ones whine all the time. They whine, man. I mean, and I'm a student of the game, man, and I still love the game, man. I mean, and I love how these guys making all this money. See, because one thing about it, man, people got to recognize, man, they only can make that money if they got that money to give. So people got to always remember, it's a wealthy guy writing a rich guy a check.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You are exactly right. Hey,
Rick,
mentioned a couple of guys earlier with the Pacers, Roger Brown. And another guy, Mel Daniels.
Mel Daniels. You know, Mel from Detroit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Mel Daniels. I mean, hey, man, George McGinnis.
Yep.
Yes.
I ain't going to talk about George McGinnis. Man, they had a great team. Hey, man, Coach Leonard.
Yeah, Slick Leonard.
Slick Leonard. Man, they had a great basketball team. Hey, man, Billy Knight. Billy Knight averaged 30 easily. Don't nobody talk about Billy Knight no more. Hey, man, this is when the game was competitive, man, when you could put your hands on a guy. You could put your forearm on a guy and stop his forward progress. Man, guys was getting 30. You know what I mean? So you can't touch a guy today in the NBA. Come on, man. If you put your hands on a guy, it's a foul. You put your forearm on me, and I'm 185 pounds, man, so I had to find a way around you, you know, and average 30. Alex Ingles averaged 30. He was about 190 pounds. You averaged 30, man, where you could put your hand on it, man. The game was a lot more physical then. But, again, they had to change the game, man, because they have to keep it entertaining, man. They got to protect these guys, man. You know what I mean? So a lot of the records, you know, like the when Klay Thompson broke my record, the 33 and a quarter, he had 37. He had 20-some points of threes.
Right.
I ain't had no three.
Right.
They got mad at me because I say you should put asterisks behind it. So, in other words, my record ain't going to never be broke, realistically.
Right.
But,
hey,
you know,
that's
just me talking.
Let's go to the Windy City. Area code 312, the last four digits, 2057. You're on with the Iceman. Chicago,
yes.
Step on up, Chicago. You're on with the Iceman.
Hey.
Hello.
Gavin Rick, my boy, Rick. You had already talked about the question I was going to ask about how I felt to play in Chicago. I will always love you as a Spur, though. And I also remember I came to San Antonio to my son's graduation, and I saw your restaurant in the airport.
Yes, sir.
Just curious, is it still open?
Oh, yeah, it's still open, man. Matter of fact, we expanded, man. So, you know, man, San Antonio, man, is a great place, you know, for me. You know, they take good care. I'm still in the front office after all these years, man, with the Spurs, man. They still treat me like I'm a part of the, you know, organization in which I am. You know, I love my time in Chicago, man, because that was my last pro city. You know, I love playing with Mike, man, because I was able to see the potential of Mike becoming who he was. And, you know, people say he's the greatest of all time. I mean, which that can be disputed. I mean, because we had a lot of great ones, but I still think he was one of the greatest entertainers of all time. you know. But I love Chicago, man. My family loves Chicago, man. And, you know, I still come up there every now and then. But, you know, San Antonio is my home, man. And you're right, man. I am recognized as a Spur.
Hey, Ice, what was it like watching Kawhi grow up? And tell our audience what kind of young man he is.
Quiet, don't ever say anything, man. Don't talk, man, but go to work. I mean, this kid, man, could just flat out play, man. I mean, you can just, I mean, he got hands like steam shovels, man. I mean, he could play, man. I mean, you know, he's definitely, in this system, he was real special. You know, I mean, and listen what I'm saying when I say this system. You know, this was his system. This is the system that, you know, he could play. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see him, you know, next year in Toronto. You know, I'm a fan, you know. I know he can play, you know, but you still have a system. You know, so I'm real interested to see, you know, how he perform next year, man. And I know he ain't going to be there long, man. He want to go out west somewhere. So I think we're going to see the best of him in the next few years.
George, I want people to know before we get off the air, we were talking about, you said earlier, about 15, 20 minutes ago, about you didn't have any creativity. So I have to go back to the basketball court to remind people how much creativity you had. When you guys used to play at the Hemisphere Arena, the Spurs were a very good team. You guys won 5 division titles. And I thought you guys were a championship team if we could just get by Magic and the Kareem team and Worthy and those guys. So there's been only a few people in the history of the game that have shot hook shots, all right? And we already know today you don't see the hook shot. It's like it's extinct. So you tell people, you don't like talking about it, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the greatest hook shot shooter in all of history. Well, how many you used to shoot on him? Tell the people about what you used to, when you threw your little hook shots on him.
Well, he couldn't get them. I mean, he used to always say, you know, I mean, I'd be saying, don't go get my shot, Kareem. He'd be saying, oh, man, you know I can't go get that. You know, I mean, shot selection was everything. You know, and that's a part of fundamentals, you know, and that's shots that I worked on in the summertime. It's imagination, you know. I mean, I used to imagine shooting over him. You know, I mean, I shot 51% career with 26,595 points. So when I shot the ball, I'm going to make it 51% of the time. You know, and so that means I have to shoot 30 times to get 30. You know, I shot the ball 14, 15 times, 16, 17 times a game. I mean, I bet if you look at my shots, game, it's probably 18, 19. I could shoot the ball, man, but I took good shots, and then I can use both hands. I mean, I can go to the hole. I mean, I can throw left and right hand hooks. I mean, I'm known for the finger roll, but I really think I should be known for that mid-range jumper. You know, I mean, so when you talk about greatness, I mean, I want to know what criteria are you using. You know, people don't know Mike and Kobe probably missed most shots than anybody in the history of the game. That's not taking anything away from them. You know, but they don't talk about the shots that they miss. I mean, you know, when a guy shoots 30 times and get 30 points, I mean, they say he had a good game.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's awful. You know what I mean? So we got our own way, especially from being a former pro, man. I got my own way of looking at, man, scores. You know.
Hey, George, I covered the Pistons doing their run with the Wallace boys and Rip and Chauncey and those guys. And I remember the mentality that Rip brought to the game. And what you said just reminded me of it. He had gone a couple of games and hadn't shot the ball well. And then he went off and had a really efficient night, maybe 35, shot a very high percentage. And the reporter came to him and said, one of the guys said, well, Rip, it's good to see you come out of that slump. what slump? He said, well, you know, you had to shot the ball. So he said, man, every time I shoot it, I think I'm going in. I wasn't in no slump. I don't know what you're talking about. And man, that just really resonated with me. Is that the mentality that you got to bring, especially at that two-guard position?
You can't be afraid to miss. I guess that's the best way to answer it. A lot of guys are afraid to miss. You know, Kobe wasn't afraid to miss. Rip wasn't afraid to miss. Michael wasn't afraid to miss. I wasn't afraid to miss. You know, so that tells you something. You know what I mean? So it's almost like, give me the ball, you know, and I don't mind shooting it. You know, so shot selection is everything, man. I mean, it's everything, man. You didn't see Kareem shooting jumpers? Kareem threw hooks. You know, Kareem threw hooks. He got, you know, I think Kareem got more points than anybody, I think, at this time. LeBron getting ready to break that, but, you know, Kareem threw hooks. You know, I shot mid-range jumpers. Artis is probably the all-time field goal shooters. He shot layups and hooks. You know what I mean? So, you know, shot selection is everything, man. I mean, and when you can score, man, and score like we did and be able to score at a higher percentage like, you know, we shot, you know, I think that's greatness. You know, I don't think that. I know it.
That's some great stuff, man.
All right. So, to follow up on that game was in 1982, and Ice, you shot 68%, 21 for 31. Mike Mitchell, 45, he shot 60%. And Junior Bridges, Brian Winters, 42 and 31, came off the bench with that. So that game was just, yeah. And the only person that hit a three on your team was Mike Brandt.
Mike Brad. So it was threes there.
Yeah, it was 82. And then
Oh, 82, I ain't shooting many threes, man. I still think it's the worst shot in basketball, man. You know, it's a it is, man. I mean, you don't nobody shoot 50%.
Right.
You know, it's a fun shot. It's a shot that we brought over from the ABA. Now, just think about it, man. Now, I'm with the big three. We got a four-point shot. I wonder when the NBA going to implement that. Interesting.
Wow. Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Probably possible.
It's entertainment, man. I mean, you know, you can shoot 2 fours, you down 10, and come down and get 2 fours, you down 2.
Right.
It's entertainment, man. I mean, it's all entertainment now, y'all. Real basketball is gone. Y'all talking about it now to a guy that played real basketball. Real basketball is gone. You know, it's all entertainment, man. I ain't sorry to say it, man, because I'm going to be remembered forever because I played real basketball.
I agree. George, I got one last question.
Your famous line, one thing I could do is finger roll. Did you have lived that with that commercial?
Say that again.
Was that an ad lib?
Yeah, I was ad lib, man.
Okay.
Yeah, I was ad lib, man. I mean, that's, you know, one thing I could do, man, was finger roll. I mean, that just came off the hip.
and that commercial is still a thing of beauty. I don't know if you heard it. We played it.
I heard it. I knew as soon as you heard it. Hey, now just think about it. I was just a fill-in when they did it.
Wow.
So, you know, I was just coming in with David Robinson.
Yeah.
And then, as you know, I stole the show.
Oh, my God.
I wanted to tell everyone, first of all, thanks for – I'm not going to keep George on here, but I really want to thank everybody for tuning in. I got to say this. I'm going to tell you how special the show is to me. My mom has not been doing great lately. So, you know, she's getting better day by day, and I thank God for that. So my mom's listening to the show tonight, and that's very special to me.
Hey, Jerry, our mom.
How old are our mom?
And that means a lot to me. So I'm glad all the people that have tuned in tonight. I appreciate my brother. And, George, we're going to let you get out of here, but I want to tell you sincerely, I not only look at you as a brother, I look at you as a friend. And for you to come out, take time out tonight and come on this show, you know how important the show is to me. And for you to actually stop what you're doing and come out and listen, you know, come on this show, man, I love you to death. And this even just shows more what kind of person you are. So I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I know Ricky has been wanting to talk to you, and Mr. Robinson, Michael is like one of your biggest fans of all time.
I mean,
sincere. He talks to me when I first talked to the gentleman. He's an Iceman fan, and he loves you more, not just as a player, but he's been all around. He travels, and he goes to different sporting events. So by him traveling and moving all around and still hold you so high in his heart, I mean, that means a lot to me. And I'm telling you that, Michael. I thank you, man. And I know it's made your night as much as
it
made
a lot to me, too, man.
All right.
You know, hey, man, I appreciate you guys, man. Glad to do it, man. I mean, like I say, man, you know, that's my baby brother, man. I love him to death, man. And he was a great pro, too, you know. He didn't stay as long as I think he could have, man, but. You know, Derek could flat out play that game, man. I still think you were one of the best offensive rebounders at that position, man, today, man. But that's a story for another night.
Well, I sure hope you come back and visit us. And
I come back, man.
Derek
could get me on, man. I appreciate you guys, man. And I don't wish y'all nothing but, man, a lot of success, man. And, Mama, I know you're listening. Love you and get well soon.
Hey, Rick.
All right.
Rick.
Well,
let me ask one quick question about this. So you talk about stealing the show. You talk about stealing the show, Ice, but you had Dr. J starring in the Fish to Save Pittsburgh, Jamal Wilkes, Cornbread Earl and me, and Bernard King, I think it was a Fast Break. So were you in any basketball movie, or did you want to be in any basketball movie?
Well, I did a sitcom, man, with Disney, ABC, man, and it's called Southern Fried Ice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did one, man, but it didn't make it, you know what I mean, because they changed, they changed executives and they threw mine in the can, so... Yeah, man, but, you know, I always thought I had a few acting skills, man. I'd be trying to get Ice Cube to give me a spot, man, but it ain't worked yet, so.
Okay. Hey, we love you, George.
Hey, man, love y'all, man. Thanks, guys, man. All right, Derek.
Take care, man. All right, thank you.
All right, much love, y'all. Okay, all right, bye-bye.
Yep. All right. That's the one and only George Iceman Gervin.
Absolutely awesome.
It's been a heck of a show. It has been a heck of a show and a heck of an evening. So I guess we're going to just get out of here. But I want all our listeners, hey, make sure you check us out at AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, where you will see some of the best sports writing and commentary on issues that not only impact the world of sports, but impact our community. Check us out at theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Check us out on Tuesdays, theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Michael Robinson and myself as host. And definitely check out Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets basketball podcast. Derek, you want to take us on out of here, man?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's been I've had so much fun today. Stephen A. Smith, you better look out because if we continue at this pace, we're coming for you, man. I don't want your job, but you're a guy that I aspire to be one day. So, you know, I just want to thank all the fans. I know we got a lot of Detroiters out there tonight as well, so I want to give it up for my Detroiters. I don't want to leave anybody out. I thank all the people all over the country. But that's where I'm from, Detroit, my home, and I want to thank all the people for tuning in all over the country, and I appreciate you very much.
All right.
Hey, gosh. All right. Well, good night, and God bless. We'll see you next time on Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets basketball podcast.